With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, my name is Mark, and I will be representing Liverpool Football Club. I am on Twitter, but it's a locked account, so you probably won't be able to find me, but it's Mr. Mark Simpson if you do.
Hi guys, I'm Jim. I'm the Leicester City representative for the EPL Roundtable. You can find me on Twitter at JimKnight88.
My name is Dylan Arvella, and I'll be talking about Manchester United on this podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Dylan Eloy Arvella.
All right, well, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, of course, we have Making the Rounds, where we each have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. We're going to start off with you, Mark. I think last time we had you on, you had just beaten Chelsea. We have you on again. You've done it again. How are you feeling after that win?
I think I'm only ever going to come on when Liverpool win away at the Bridge from now on. It seems to be a good omen. I'm ecstatic. You know, I had a really good feeling going into the game that we were going to at least get a draw. Whenever I am on this podcast, I know it is once a year at the moment, but I do bang on about the importance of averaging 10 out of 15 points consistently every five games, and with a win it took us up to that magical 10 points, and even more impressive seeing that we've been to the Emirates, we've been to White Hart Lane, and now we've been to the Bridge. So three out of the four toughest away games of the season, in my opinion, have just been boxed off. The game itself, I know Chelsea and Ivanovic were largely at fault, but we took advantage of it and we got two goals in at half time. You sort of knew that there was going to be a bit of a comeback from Chelsea in that second half, which obviously it came and we didn't help ourselves. But the most impressive thing this season compared to last season is that when we do like suffer a fault, like a lapse in concentration, the 10 to 15 minutes afterwards, we are sort of getting our head and we are bossing the game and we are working the game management is a lot better this year, which has been really impressive. And 2-1, it could have easily been 3-1 if Origi had put away that headed chance. But, you know, moving forward now, with Hull coming up next, we've got a really good chance now to push on and get some serious points on the board before going to Old Trafford in a few weeks' time.
Big question that's been floating around the Liverpool ether lately has been Daniel Sturridge and his unwillingness to say that he plays out wide, but a lot of times he's drifting out wide. Now you have to accommodate Firmino back in there, even though he did not make the trip in this match. How do you think you'll most frequently line up this season? Will it be with Sturridge up top? Will it be with Firmino? Kind of is that false nine?
You know, the funniest thing and about that apparent quote was, you got to take it in context. The journalist asked this guy, where does he prefer to play? And he's obviously a centre forward. He's going to say centre forward. And the media asked this question for a reason. And obviously when an answer gets thinking, it's their job to spin it. And it came out of all this fury that he hates being played out wide. But anybody who watches Liverpool games, and you know, I obviously watch quite a few of them, knows that in this current Jurgen Klopp formation, the three forward players, which has mostly been Coutinho, Firmino or Mane, or Sturridge and Coutinho, or Sturridge and Firmino, they don't stick in a one position. That they rotate a heck of a lot. A lot of the times you'll see Mane as the front runner, or sometimes you'll see it being Coutinho. It switches and it's fluid, and the defenders haven't got a clue what's coming next. So that question was obviously asked for a reason. Sturridge obviously gave his answer, and his answer was then spun into millions of different directions. And it was a bit crazy, a bit mad. But, I mean, in my personal opinion, I reckon for the majority of away games, especially in the big away games, when you've got a fully fit forward line, you will see Coutinho, Firmino and Mane because of the options and the running and the movement that Firmino offers that maybe a Sturridge doesn't offer. And at home games, when you're playing against the likes of, say, Hull or a Burnley, you may see more likely to see a Sturridge up top because against a team that sits back so much, and you're only going to get a chance for a touch and a strike, and it's literally seconds. There's no better player out there, in my opinion, than Sturridge, and he scores goals, and he's broken records at Liverpool. But this is, for the first time in quite a few years, we've got options, which is the most important thing. No defence can set up against us at present moment in time, because if you were a team that presses a high line, like Tottenham did the other week, then Mane will absolutely kill you with his pacing behind. If you have a deep line defence, like for example, Leicester did the other week, then someone like Firmino and Sturridge will take advantage of it because of the trickery and the close control in the box. And if you have a mid-block, then that's going to suit someone like Coutinho or Firmino down to the ground, because they will hold the ball up, and then you've got the on-running Lallana and Gini Wijnaldum in this new sort of 4-3-3 formation. And it's the guys that are running on and going in front of the forward, then they'll take advantage of it. So it's really impressive this year. I mean, I was really intrigued before the Arsenal game at how Jurgen Klopp was going to line up, and it'll be even more interesting when we've got a fully fit team, because we're still minus Emre Can, who's probably the first name on the team sheet. We're down on Karius, who's our first choice goalkeeper at the moment. So when everybody's back and everybody's fit and firing, you know, we've got so many options at present moment in time, and Jurgen Klopp has got everybody bought in. And I do believe it's from making these signings early, getting everybody off the pre-season early. You know, all the major signings was done, and he's had a full proper pre-season with these guys, and it's really proven dividends.
Yeah, well, from that very big win to Jim, who Leicester have proved the doubters wrong a lot this week with a win in the Champions League, and obviously a very big win in the Premier League as well. Obviously, some people doubted your ability to keep up, you know, any semblance of performance from last season. I'm assuming from what we've seen this week that you believe the contrary.
Yeah, I'm not going to go on record and say we're going to win the Premier League again.
no, it's so weird.
It's difficult. We obviously made such a mixed start to the campaign. It was difficult to maybe ascertain quite what to expect from Leicester this year, based on the fact, you know, we opened the campaign with a loss to Hull, drew with Arsenal. Again, decent result in hindsight at home. Keep them out and kind of keep a clean sheet, but then we go and get duffed up by Liverpool. But then a lot of good teams will get roundly spanked by Liverpool this year by the looks of it, because they're operating at a very high level at the moment. Klopp is getting a fine tune out of a really attacking team, and that's great to watch. So it was good to kind of bounce back with two wins in a week, 2-3-0 wins, two clean sheets. Obviously a nice start to our Champions League campaign as well. I don't think we could have found a better opponent really to start against than Bruges. They were pretty average. I can't see them doing much this year. And if they play like they did against us, there's every chance that they could potentially finish the group with 0 points. So, you know, that was great to kind of bounce back from the Liverpool win so quickly. Obviously, quite a quick turnaround, really. Wednesday night away game to a Saturday afternoon match. A lot of times, sometimes if you're on Wednesday, you sometimes get a Sunday game. But it was just one of those things, you know. At least it was a home game against a winnable opponent, where we really kind of didn't really have to get out of third gear. Burnley are kind of one of the better matchups, I guess, for Leicester, in the sense that their attacking threat tends to be long balls over the top, and to Andre Gray, who, yeah, he's quick, but that relies on him getting the ball down and being able to control it, whereas we're able to just kind of head the balls away 90% of the time and relying on something really, really special, either from a set piece or, you know, a great piece of skill to from him to be able to open the scoring. So we always look quite comfortable, and I just felt like it was a good home debut from Soleimani as well, stepping up and kind of bringing something that we don't really have, or we haven't had a lot in the team since Leonardo Ulloa lost his starting place to Shinji Okazaki for the most part. So neither him or Ahmed Musa bring that kind of aerial presence at set pieces, and kind of he's not slow. The guy's, you know, relatively quick across the ground. He was chasing down the defenders and stuff and putting pressure on. So he's obviously buying into the high press system. And he's just a bull of a guy. I mean, I didn't realise quite how big he was until I saw him in person in the ground on Saturday. The guy is huge. He's going to cause some real problems in the air for a lot of teams this year. So it's an exciting signing. It's good to see, you know, we've broken the transfer record a couple of times this year. It's good to see that hopefully the reason they've done that is someone who's really going to be able to produce on the biggest stage.
Yeah, you brought up Soleimani a fair bit there. It looks like you'd prefer to play him alongside Vardy. We used to talk about the Albrighton versus Musa thing. It seems like Albrighton has locked down that spot for himself. Do you think we'll see those other guys more in rotations in the Champions League, or do you think that this is truly like each week a different guy could win the job?
Yeah, I think it depends kind of how fitness-wise people are going. Obviously, we've played 3 games in 8 days. Now, so there's we'll see a full 11 change. Well, 10 plus the goalkeeper, Zila will probably play in the midweek game against Chelsea. I think apart from that, it will see a full 10 outfield players change. And then I think going forward, it'll just be a case by case basis. It might well be matching up opposition in terms of who we feel is weakest against certain types of attack, you know, whether it be that we go to a 4-3-3 or we stick with a 4-4-2. But I mean, certainly from the early interplay between Vardy, Mahrez and Soleimani, they look a kind of well-oiled unit already, which is a scary prospect considering Soleimani's only probably trained with the team a handful of times because we wouldn't have trained the day after Bruges. He didn't arrive back from international duty with Algeria until Thursday last week. So he's probably only had 3 or 4 training sessions, I guess, at full tilt with kind of the rest of the team. So hopefully there's some more kind of improvements come out of that relationship. There's an existing relationship there with Mahrez already from the national team. So that's a really kind of decent prospect for us. And I think those two will be the first choice. Vardy certainly is a regular kind of 90-minute player, or has been for the last couple of years. His fitness is kind of an insane level. It might just be the case of, as you saw on Wednesday, both of the guys come off around the half an hour, 70-minute mark. Don't push them too hard when we're already comfortable in the game. Give them a kind of rest for the rest of the match. Let the other guys do the running. And then they're in better condition to take Burnley on Saturday. So, yeah, I think it's very much horses for courses in that sense. But I think Ranieri has obviously got a lot to choose from. We've got options, you know, an £18 million man in terms of Musa. On the bench is not a bad option to have, and Leo and Shinji. So, yeah, there's plenty of options there. It's just a matter of kind of who we think feels best. I'd certainly agree with you in the Albrighton assessment. I think Moose has got a long way to go before he secures a starting spot with Albrighton. He almost seems to have upped his game another level this year. Yesterday he was or Saturday, as we recorded, he was absolutely brilliant. So I think he's got a lot of work to do, really, unless he wants to be restricted to kind of cup games and kind of 20 minutes off the bench here and there.
Yeah, we'll definitely be interesting to see how that all pans out at Leicester. Dylan, glad to have you back on. Maybe you're not so glad after your recent run of performances. Mourinho losing 3 straight games, I think I saw in a decade, is obviously not something you were expecting when you signed him and all these big name players in the offseason. What have you made of Manchester United's week on the whole, and how do you think you could bounce back?
Yeah, so it hasn't been the easiest week to be a Manchester United fan. Like you said, a lot of Man United fans were not expecting this. After big wins against Bournemouth, Southampton and Hull, Manchester United's world has really sort of come crashing back to reality with 3 defeats in a week. And like you said, yeah, that was the first time since 2005, I believe, that Mourinho's lost 3 in a row. There was the Manchester derby last week, which has been touched on pretty much everywhere, but just briefly from me, if a United fan says they deserved a point in that match, they're definitely lying, because I think Manchester City completely outplayed us, which is a huge concern, and they look to be running away with the league in that sense. But after that came the Feyenoord match in Europa League. Feyenoord, they're currently top of the Eredivisie, but still the quality is questionable. Like, they've got the likes of Brad Jones in goals, who isn't a very good goalkeeper. But Jose, he came out before the match and said that it's not a competition that Manchester United see themselves being in, which is frustrating for me. And I imagine for a lot of fans, because players seem to take any excuse to not put in 100%. And that sort of panned out like that. United set up in a 4-3-3, like many fans had been calling for a lot of the season. That was because Wayne Rooney was left at home, which was always going to be the case in Europa League, which gave Pogba, who has been struggling, but I still, you'd be stupid not to back him, really. But he was given a license to sort of roam around, but he didn't really seem prepared for that, which is a bit disappointing. And United as a whole seemed very unprepared for that match, as if they hadn't been training for that formation and that particular match. And the likes of Marcus Rojo and Ashley Young, they came into the fold for the first time in this competitive season, which shows that United still have a lot of fat to trim around the squad that aren't really up to the level of the United sides of a decade ago. And United, where they want to go, those sort of players probably don't, Not even probably, they don't really have a part to play in a successful United future. But moving on from that game, the game today against Watford, I was pretty confident going into that match, but the concern was always big Troy Deeney, who was very impressive for Watford. In the first half, Watford really had the better of United, and they should have been up by two. The first one, there was a miscommunication between Smalling, who came back into the Premier League for his first Premier League match of the season, and David De Gea, and De Gea sort of flapped at it. But I think it was Smalling's fault, and it fell to Igalo. And Igalo of last season, or the first half of last season, would have put Watford 1-0 up. And then there was a great save by De Gea, which sort of really rattled United. And then Martial, he took a knock, which seemed like a concussion, and then a couple of minutes later he stayed on, which sort of led to the goal. Sorry, I messed that bit up. He was fouled, and Mourinho's complained about that in the post-match press conference. That led to the Etienne Capoue goal, which I'm sure, Kev, you'll agree, that's a very strange goal scoring streak that he's on. But to be fair, I sort of see it as a bit of karma towards Mourinho, because Martial shouldn't have been on the field. He was clearly concussed. And after that goal, Ashley Young was subbed on for him. And then really for the next sort of 20 minutes, we struggled to sort of get back into it. But after the break, we really pushed on. Rashford got the equaliser, and I was with a couple of mates, and we were all pretty confident that United were going to go on and win that match. But then really our attack lacked any sort of direction, any venom, which compared to Manchester City a week ago against us, they were very, very potent in attack. And then Zuniga came on for Watford, and with his first touch, he scored a lovely goal, which, credit to him, I think that was might have been his second game for Watford. And then United were really scrapping for it, but no real chances. A couple of long range shots from Pogba, but there really wasn't anything. Fellaini, he gave away a penalty in the dying seconds, which was clumsy, but most United fans have sort of let the game go by that stage. United in that match, they were given four yellow cards for abusing the referee. Which I feel shows that they weren't in control of themselves, and that's a pressing concern. And it'll be very interesting to see if Mourinho can halt this slide before it turns into a complete derailment. It's early on, but after Chelsea last season, Mou doesn't really have the runs on the board that I think he thinks he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely on, well, I don't want to say definitely on a short leash, but obviously after what happened at Chelsea, it's a lot shorter than it had been at previous clubs, considering his prior successes. The defense, obviously not very good. In this one, is any part of that, do you think, having to get Smalling back in there, no Daily Blint, and Eric Bailly has not covered himself in glory after those two first amazing matches. Do you think the defense is the problem right now?
It's one of the issues. I was saying to my mate earlier today that Chris Smalling, he was sort of the leading light for Manchester United, or at least the defense last season. But really, the United, where they want to be, if they want to be a top five, top four, three club in the world, he's not the defender for that. And really, he's been found out on a lot of occasions, even last year, that he isn't really the best technical defender. His pace makes up for a lot of his deficiencies in that sense. And I feel that Eric Bailly, he started the season really well, and he has the potential to be really good. I'm not sure if the communication's really there between Smalling and Bailly, and it was also wasn't present for the first goal against Manchester City last week with Daley Blind messing up on that occasion. But Blind also doesn't seem to be the answer for Mourinho's side at left-sided centre-back. But I don't really know what the options are. Fosu Mensah hasn't got a look in this year, which I thought that he was going to be a real Mourinho-type player. Luke Shaw does look good, but that's always been a more attacking position rather than a defensive one. Valencia's not a proper right-back, even though he has been playing very well there. And I mentioned like our backups are your likes of Phil Jones, who's really struggled in the last few years. Marcos Rojo, who isn't a very good defender. When we signed him from Sporting, he wasn't their best defender at the time. So I don't know where Mourinho goes from here. We were pretty confident, like I mentioned at the start, after our late win against Hull and going into the international break. But we're not sure where United fans aren't sure where to look now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For Tottenham, today we'll start with was pretty crazy. Lineup to really begin the day with Pochettino making loads of changes. We had Vertonghen at left back, which unlike Mark, your Surge comments where it was a little taken out of context, Vertonghen is not taken out of context when he says he never wants to play left back, despite his constant position there for Belgium. So that came as a surprise. We played Dyer at left-sided center back. So not only did we pull him out of position, quote unquote, because he has been playing in the midfield for the better part of a year, but we also put him on the wrong side, which Pochettino is known to not like to do. Kind of begs the question where Kevin Vimmer is. Wasn't even on the bench. If we don't see him against Gillingham, then we're going to have some serious questions about what's going on with him and Tottenham, because we've had this with players before, where players that were very crucial for us the previous season. Oh, well, Vimmer wasn't crucial, but the 2 months where Vertonghen was out, he stepped in and did a phenomenal job. But we've seen players like that just randomly disappear with Adebayor. It happened to Kapu. It happened to Benteleb under Pochettino, where all of a sudden something happens and then they're just never seen from again. Heard from again. Hopefully that is not the case, because I do really like Vimmer and think he's a very, very talented young center back. So anyway, those were all very strange. Moussa Sissoko gets his first full start because there's space, because neither Eric Lamela or Christian Eriksen get the start, which I thought was obviously bold, but they were both on tired legs somewhat, so you can understand it. I just didn't expect to see so many changes at once. But again, I think we'll have a clearer shape of how these squads are going to break down after we see what happens in the League Cup. I'd expect a lot of rotation. As Jim was saying, we'll see with Leicester. I think we'll see Onuma, maybe Harry Winks, maybe even a Cameron Carter-Vickers signing I would really like to see, because these are all players that really would have thrived if we were in the Europa League this year. because those are the matches where we would rotate and give the youth a chance. We don't have that luxury this year because we are in the Champions League. Well, we'll see how long for. But we aren't able to give those kids the same kind of chance. So I hope that we do play a lot of the kids, and I hope that we win. I know a lot of the bigger clubs not so worried about this competition, but this is really the main place where a lot of those young kids will get a shot. And I really do want to see what we have in Onuma. I know his advancement is why we felt so comfortable letting both Pritchard and Mason go. He can play in central midfield as an attacking midfielder. He's played out on the wing for us probably the most often when he's played with the first team, just because we lack a little bit of depth on that right wing. But anyway, it was a very strange lineup today. But we were very effective throughout the pitch, just maybe not in front of goal. I'll get to that in a second more. But we dominated the majority of this match. They had one decent chance, Steven Pienaar, funnily enough, formerly of Tottenham for about 6 months. I don't know how many people will recall that. Anyway, he had a gilt-edged chance, but quick thinking from Kyle Walker helped kind of quell the threat. He had a goal line clearance that was very much needed because Lloris was on the other side of the goal. So was very pleased that we shut that down, because that's what got us at Monaco, were things like that, small mistakes or just unlucky bounces that led to goals. So we did prevent that, helped us get the win. I'll get into individuals more when we get to player watch. But Kane does score again. But as I was joking around with Mark before, as a fantasy owner of Kane, the problem with that is that his first touches in front of goal are really A, unnecessary, and B, not very good. Both last week and this week, he should have scored first time, but instead collected himself, put it into goal. It's very good that he's that calm in front of goal, but also please just hit him first time going forward, because it just raises a whole lot of nerves. Although he won't be able to do it immediately, because unfortunately he did pick up an ankle injury in this one. It's not, if you see the picture or the slow-mo, it looks much, much worse than it was. Is it a bad ankle injury? To an extent. He'll probably be out 2 to 3 weeks. But it could have been much, much worse. It could have been a high ankle sprain. We could have seen him out for maybe a month, month plus. Could have had actual ligament damage. Could have actually snapped bone or something like that. It's none of those things, I would assume. We're going to have the full medical information tomorrow. But just based on having played sports myself, it did not look nearly as bad as some people were reacting. And we did bring in Jansen, who a little bit struggled when he came on as a sub, would have had a great assist to Lamela, but insisted on shooting it himself. But this was the point of bringing in Jansen, is for these situations. So if this had happened last year, it would have been absolutely devastating. It's still not good, don't get me wrong, but at least we have a physical human being that can play up front in Kane's absence. So I'm not as worried about that as other Spurs fans are. We also picked up some other injuries throughout. Moussa Dembele and Eric Dier were both subbed off after clutching the back of their legs. We were thinking hamstrings. Pochettino came out and said that they were really just cramps and that they'll be okay, which is good, but I also kind of don't believe it a whole lot. But we'll see with them. Dele Alli and Kyle Walker both also came up limping during the match, but seemed to have run off whatever niggles they had picked up. So we should be okay as far as that goes, which is very important because we have had so many matches and we're about to have so many more that we cannot be losing members of the squad right now. And this was one of the concerns in the transfer window, is that we had so many outgoings of players that we thought, you know, weren't really going to be getting a chance. But, you know, you send out Benteleb, you send out Carroll, or sorry, not Carroll, you send out Mason, and you get rid of Chadley, and all of a sudden the squad's not really as bolstered size-wise as it had been in the past. So if we can squeak by this injury scare, I think that's very good, but I do think we need to address it in January. Now on to the Monaco match. First of all, I'll be fully up front. I told Dylan on Twitter, when asked tactical things about this Monaco game, I'm not sure. I went with some friends to a pub to watch this one, and so I was much more in fan mode and drinking mode than I was in analyst mode, and I'm sorry for that. But from my quick takes, it was obviously a very disappointing result. We attacked heavily, as our lineup would have indicated, with Dele Alli, quote-unquote, starting in central midfield, but really just drifting forward pretty much the whole time. I really would have liked to see Dembele, and apparently Poch agreed long-term because he did come on at the half. It was just simple mistakes that led to their goals, and obviously it was very frustrating. You do it at Wembley. You do it in front of 85, 90,000 or 100,000 fans, depending on whose quotes you want to go by. I'm going to assume it's towards the lower end of that. And as Pochettino said, We as a club, as a fan base, have waited 6 years to be back here. And the fact that we came out a little sluggish, I think, surprised everyone at the club and fans alike, that we weren't really coming out there firing, which was disappointing. The second half we dominated, but weren't able to put a goal in, which was obviously very frustrating. Although we did have the Alderweireld header, which did, you know, give us a chance to get back in there for the draw. We just never did. Kane had a terrific chance that he kicked that just did not have enough power on it, allowed for a pretty easy save from Monaco. So hopefully we won't see that in our next Champions League tie. Obviously, we have the EFL this week instead. We'll see how all of it goes. I'm less optimistic just because it would have been really nice to get a draw, because the other match ended in a draw between Leverkusen and CSKA. So it would have been nice to kind of all been level there. Although that draw does give us a better chance of winning the group, it does not help us in terms of making sure we're in the top two, which is obviously very crucial. So we'll see how that goes. Monaco are a much better team than a lot of people thought they were, and we still outplayed them. Hopefully the results will come. Just to wrap up these two matches in a neat little bow, in our last two matches combined, we have had 46 shots, 12 shots on target, and 25 corners. We've allowed 13 shots, 4 shots on target, and only one corner. So 80% of the pitch, not the problem. Just have to score more and can't make mistakes at the back. Because at the end of the day, goals are what actually, you know, chooses the results in football. All right, and from there, we're going to head into the topic, which is going to be about managers. Not specifically ours, although we can get to that a bit if you'd like. But we've seen Mark Hughes at Stoke struggling a lot lately. Stoke currently last in goals for, goals against, and obviously, therefore, goal difference. They're one of the worst teams I've seen this season in any competition that I've seen, and especially considering their talent. That has to be massively disappointing. You have Swansea, who had higher aspirations, although they didn't really fill in the transfer market, drifting down there. You have West Ham, 2 straight 4-2 defeats. So my question for you guys is, which manager do you think has done a poor job, or which one do you think is likely going to be out the door first?
Yeah, Mark Hughes is certainly under the most pressure, I think, out of any Premier League manager at the moment. Tony Pulis did himself a big favour, obviously, with a huge win for West Brom this weekend. That's kind of got him out of some real pressure. I think he was certainly the favourite for me before this weekend's fixtures, despite Stoke's struggling start, with their new Chinese takeover being ratified very, very soon. I think he is. He's still probably one of the leading contenders, but certainly you can't ignore the fact that Stoke keep conceding 4 goals in their Premier League games. It's not going to last long as a manager if that continues to be the case. I saw a stat today that only Espanyol in Spain have conceded more top flight goals in Europe's top five divisions in 2016. Wow. Than Stoke. So yeah, it's a pretty damning statistic. I think it's 50 goals in the calendar year, and when you consider we are only in September, that is a huge amount of goals to be conceding. And obviously the way they've started this Premier League campaign, conceding 4 seemingly at will, there's going to be a lot of ill feeling, I think, around him. He has had money to spend in the transfer market, and obviously they moved from Tony Pulis because of the style, the playing style, and Hughes has tried to take that forward and create a more attacking philosophy within the team. And they've signed some good players. I know they've got a few injuries at the moment. Shaqiri's not playing, but you know, Bojan and Arnautovic started today. They have had some, you know, some decent players come in, and there really isn't any excuse if you're getting beat 4-0 by Crystal Palace. With all due respect to Jay and the Eagles beat guys, you know, that is a really worrying trend for Stoke City. And unlike, you know, Alan Pardew, who started the season under pressure, he hasn't got a cup run or anything to fall back on and say, look, this is what we achieved last year. It just does seem like they did okay for the first half of last year and then have kind of been spiraling out of control since then. And yeah, he's certainly favourite. I'm looking at the bookmakers' odds now. He leads it. Then Tony Pulis. And then it's kind of a bit of a jump to the next guys. So I think it looks like a bit of a two-horse race at the moment, although if they get something at West Brom next week, then I suppose that will kind of ease the pressure on him and ramp up that pressure on Pulis, which is probably a good thing from Hughes' point of view, for sure.
Yeah, West Brom obviously did get a big win against West Ham and Bilic, which is why he might get a stay of execution there a bit. Mark, what do you think about the Hughes situation? Is there anyone else you think might be kind of on the hot seat at the moment?
No, I think it is Mark Hughes. it's just, like I say, it's a bit of a worrying trend when you're losing games 4-1, 4-1, you know, 4-0. It shows that maybe your team aren't with you as such. But it's really is between Mark Hughes and then that whole Tony Pulis situation going on at West Brom. He's always the type. He will walk away from a team, as it proved with Palace the day before a season starts. So it's really is between them two.
I think with the Paul's situation, I think he's more likely to walk away rather than get sacked. But also, the fans have been on his back for since he came in there. So that's a pretty hostile situation there. I think with Mark Hughes, he was given a lot of credit in the last year and the season before for sort of changing the way Stoke has played. But I think the transfer policy of bringing in an Arnautović, Bojan, Shaqiri and the likes of that, they're all very mercurial players that you can't expect them to really gel because none of them have been consistent throughout their careers. And that's why I thought Jonathan Walters coming back into the side today, I thought he might have changed things for them. Even though he's not as talented, he's just sort of a more stable figure. When he got sent to the stands last week, that was a clear sign that he's losing control of the situation. So it wouldn't be surprising if he was to get sacked, because I imagine wages, that'd be right up there for clubs outside that aren't expected to get top four, top six. That'd probably be right up there. The other candidates you sort of mentioned, Slaven Bilic, obviously he's got a lot of brownie points from last season, and you can always say injuries have really plagued his side, like the likes of Creswell and Andre Ayew. But considering four goals against West Brom, that's not a good look at all. And really, other than Mikel Antonio, they have really been struggling this season. And obviously, the fan unrest around the new stadium is producing a pretty poor vibe around West Ham Football Club. But the other one that I don't think anyone's mentioned is David Moyes at Sunderland. His transfer policy is what I feel's could really undermine his time there. Sam Allardyce relied a lot on experienced players to get him out of the quagmire that they were in last year. But you look at the players that he's brought in this season, the likes of Papadimoudzis, who's, you know, they paid more for him than Chelsea did, and he only played 30 seconds or something for Chelsea, and that's a very strange signing. Paddy McNair, who I'm not completely convinced, he does show up for Northern Ireland, but other than his first couple of appearances for Man United, he didn't do much there. The likes of Donald Love, who's very inexperienced. Stephen Pienaar, who I think made his debut for Sunderland this morning against Tottenham, but he's got a very bad injury record. Didier Ndong, who hasn't got on the field. Victor Emenichi, who hasn't done anything since Kolo Touré passed him the ball what seems like three, four years ago. It's very strange transfer policy. And after they had a positive start of the season with against Man City, but watching the game against Everton last week, that 15-minute period where Everton just tore them to pieces, I really worry for David Moyes because he, in the last three clubs he's been at, Manchester United, Real Sociedad, and now Sunderland, he is seemingly unable to sort of arrest you know, a downward spiral. So I could really see Moyes within a couple of weeks being really under the cosh into keeping his job. And as you know, Sunderland's hierarchy isn't afraid of switching things around.
Yeah, I definitely agree there, and I'm glad that you mentioned Bilic after I gently tried to mention him multiple times. But yeah, obviously he does have a lot of credit from last season, as you mentioned. But he crashed out of the Europa League twice. And then what's the point? I think it was Dan Watts that comes on here sometimes to talk about West Brom and talks about how West Ham fight all season to try to get up into a European spot, and then they just throw it away as soon as they're in. So kind of what's the point of their season if they're going to keep doing that? And now it doesn't even look like they'd be close to getting there. And I agree with you. The IU injury after you pay that much for him is very troubling. But Sean came on a segment and he was saying that they like Masuaku almost as much as they like Cresswell. So even though it's a knock from last year's 11, it isn't apparently viewed as a knock internally. And, I mean, you get Arbeloa. He's not up to fitness yet. You're supposed to play Sam Byram. He's not available. So then you end up having to play Havard Nordtveit, which I thought was a very sneaky signing on a free, but out of position, maybe not as ideal. You don't have Andy. I almost said Tom. You don't have Andy Carroll. But, yeah, things are going very poorly for them. And another one is Swansea with Guidolin, who I think most were surprised when he was signed. Some were surprised when he was retained over the summer. And now things are not looking very good for them at all. Gylfi Sigurdsson cannot carry a whole team on his back and has not even been that tremendous. They'd have a chance to equalize today and just missed it. But they just lost Nathan Dyer, who, Jim, you may know. The only reason I say may is because he didn't really feature a whole lot last season with Leicester. Still got his medal.
He scored that one goal against Aston Villa where he headed the ball in, which might be his
Wait,
first.
Wait, he got a headed goal?
Yeah, he got a headed goal to beat Aston Villa 3-2 at the King Power from 2-0 down. We were 2-0 down with about half an hour to go. And he headed the ball and kind of got concussed. So that took him out for like the next 6 weeks or something ridiculous. And then we barely never... I think the next time I remember seeing him was at the medal presentation.
Yep.
For the trophy. So, yeah, he was anonymous for most of the season.
Right.
But I wouldn't want him to be an integral part of a team that is hoping to kind of maintain Premier League status.
Right. And as I mentioned in the intro, they did not replenish the losses of IU or of Ashley Williams. And so they were in a situation where they did need Nathan Dyer, and now he's out for a couple months, and you should have never been in a position where you needed him in the first place. I totally agree with you on that point. They're in big trouble, and they're dealing with Neil Taylor, who obviously plays a big role in the Welsh squad, but had a bit of a falling out this week with Guidolin, although he said that, you know, he's only worried about the football and stuff like that. But this club is not headed in the right direction. Borja being on the bench today is a big step forward. I thought he was probably their best signing this summer, but it's not enough. The midfield isn't enough. Talking about players that you can't rely on, I said on a segment right before their match last week against Chelsea that you can't rely on Leroy Fair, and then he scored another goal. I think it was his fourth of the season already, third or fourth. But you can't. He is a very, very inconsistent player. When he's running hot, he's one of the better central midfielders you'll see, but that's not a very common thing. So you're dealing with that. Just there's no depth anywhere to speak of, really. I'm very concerned for them. And I think I saw a Swansea fan earlier saying, maybe we should set Guidolin, but who would we get? And the fact that they're still in that situation after they got rid of Monk, I think is just mind-boggling. That they were so unprepared for that, took action like that, and are still potentially reeling from it. I realized that Swansea were amazing down the second half stretch last season. I think Gylfi Sigurdsson had the most or the second most goals in the second half of last season. But this is not a well-constructed team. Losing two key players like that and not replacing them is a real quick way to get into a relegation fight. All right, and from that depressing thing, let's go into a more optimistic thing in Player Watch. And we're just going to be talking about players that impressed. Don't worry about players that disappointed, unless, Dylan, you feel moved by the spirit to talk about players that have been very poor for Manchester United. But we'll start off with you, Mark. Who impressed for you? We'll ask you to just limit it to one or two in Liverpool's win over Chelsea.
Okay, so Jordan Henderson.
He scored a real good goal.
Hang on a second. Am I talking about players that were impressed or players that didn't impress?
No, impressed.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, Jordan Henderson and Jeannie Wijnaldum. Both of them were very, very good against Chelsea. Jordan Henderson has had a lot of critics. England fans and a lot of Liverpool fans don't think that he should be Liverpool captain, never mind in the actual team at the moment. But he's done really well in the absence of Shan this season. He's a learner, and that's one thing that he's always done. He's adopted. He's flexible. He's a very clever footballer, and like I was saying earlier, it'll be really interesting to see what happens when Shan comes back, where he plays, whether he comes in and starts rotating a bit with Wijnaldum and Lallana, or if he keeps his place and Shan has a bit of bench time. But like I say, really impressed with him and Wijnaldum. He came in at like 25, 30 million from Newcastle, and a lot of people were wondering where he was going to play. Was he going to be in the front three, or was he going to be in the central three? And he's just slotted in really well. Really impressed. Lallana as well. I think his change of position and just Klopp's influence on a whole since he's come in last October has been, I mean, Lallana's been the one person that's really, really improved. Southampton fans will testify to this, but when he first signed, he could only last for 60, 70 minutes. For a long, long time, you got to 60 minutes and Lallana would just drop out of games. And his fitness and his work rate is just unreal. Really impressed with him. And yeah, it's hard to limit it down to just one or two or three players because the whole team did really well on Friday night. But those are the three that really impressed.
Yeah, still very frustrated that we were willing to pay 30 for Sissoko, but not the 25 for Wijnaldum, where he thought he was going to sign with us. Whoops. Moves down to Liverpool, obviously. Maybe not the start he would have liked, but it sounds like he has turned things around of late. Jim, who impressed for Leicester?
It's obvious, but obviously Islam Soleimani looked particularly good, considering it was his home debut and only his second start for the team. We were personally really impressed, and obviously first chance that a lot of people have had to see him in person unless they made to the trip to Bruges in midweek. So that's an encouraging signing when you know Leicester aren't used to making £30 million signings. So we're certainly kind of wanting to expect great things from him. On that front, I would hesitate to give him man of the match necessarily, because I feel like Christian Fuchs was a better shout for that. He was exceptional defensively. He was so composed on the ball, made numerous kind of tackles and interceptions to snuff out whatever kind of Burnley had going down that left wing. And he also put the assist in for Soleimani's first goal as well. And I think in terms of like fantasy, I know it's something that a lot of guys who listen to this podcast are very into. I think Christian Fuchs is going to be a kind of big player in terms of a defender who can chip in with assists this year, particularly now that we've got Soleimani, who's a bit more of an asset in the air. His dead ball and long throw prowess is really going to come to the fore now that we're going to kind of actively target that aerial presence a bit more. So yeah, he certainly impressed for me. Mahrez was a lot better than we've seen, I think, off the back of his performance in the Champions League, which was excellent. He put in another kind of solid performance, and I certainly hope that that's the kind of springboard to getting him back to the kind of form that we saw last year, because that's essential if we've got kind of high, lofty ambitions of getting back into Europe next year, that he plays his part.
All right, and Dylan, who impressed, if anyone, for Manchester United?
I'm a little tad. A couple of people impressed me from that game, but really, I'm stretching it a little bit. Obviously, Marcus Rashford, he's been phenomenal since coming into the United side last year. But in this game, he was probably our leading light. He kept running out the Watford defenders, even when there wasn't many people running around him. And he drew a lot of fouls, which is good to see that he doesn't need the players around him performing for himself to be performing. And the other one is Luke Shaw. He's impressed me, not just this game, but the last few games. He's flying up the touchline. He's probably the best attacking fullback in the league for mine. And I feel that he could be United's left-back for another decade. And he was okay against Watford.
Fair enough. Yeah, for Tottenham, I forewent... Is that a word? I foregoed? Anyway, I passed on Youngman Son to give it to Christian Eriksen, who I thought had been very disappointing and then had just recently turned things around. This week, no Eriksen. Youngman Son was very good yet again. I feel like sometimes he tries to do too much with the ball, but he was clearly our main creative outlet in a team devoid of Eriksen and Eric Lamella. Sorry. So I was very impressed with him. And you know, there were rumors that he was trying to move back to Germany. Even Pochettino remarked on it recently and said that after he came back from the Olympics, he was hoping to move back to Germany, but decided to stay, fight for his place, and has done a very good job thus far. Would have liked to see more from him against Monaco in the Champions League on that big pitch. You'd think that Son and his pace really would have unlocked a lot of things for us. Wasn't as successful there, but in the last two Premier League matches, very hard to fault him for anything he's been doing. So very pleased with him on the whole. Anyone else that impressed? No, I mean, not Kane, really. Yeah, no, not particularly. I think Kyle Walker has been understatedly very good, so I'll bring him up. Just because it's possible he's been our best player this whole season, combined. So big ups to Kyle Walker for really, really improving. I don't know how much of it is really improvement based on the fact that he can now just lock in next to Toby Alderweireld, who is obviously one of the better center backs in the league, and their partnership might be helping. Toby can also help back him up at times. But Walker's positioning does seem to have improved as well, and he no longer is just relying on his pace, which is a terrifying prospect for opposing teams because he was fully serviceable when he was only relying on his pace. Now that he's actually found decent positioning and can use his pace only as an asset instead of a get out of jail free card, he's been very dangerous. And I think, you know, while a lot of the Spurs players were disappointing at the Euros, I don't think Kyle Walker was to blame for anything, really. And so it's been very nice to see him kind of transform from more of a quote-unquote athlete to more of a full, well-rounded footballer. All right, very quickly, we're going to touch on match previews. Some of us may not know our opposition that well, but I'll start off with Tottenham versus Gillingham. They are currently at the dizzying heights of 13th place in League One. I don't know why I said something that negative. Clearly, that means we're going to lose now. Haven't knocked on any wood. Like I said, I think we'll see a lot of rotation. I think we'll see a fair few of the kids in there. Obviously, expecting to win this one. I don't even know if we'll risk Jansen, although I'm not sure who he would play up front in his stead. But now that we need him in the Premier League, and maybe in the Champions League, depending on if that 2 to 3 week timetable, I guess, is correct, it'll be a tight one. But hopefully, even with the kids, we'll be able to pull through here. I'd expect we'd see Trippier and Davis and your usual rotated guys, like I said, Onuma, Winks, and Cameron Carter-Vickers would be the young guys that you might want to keep an eye on in this one. All right, and Mark, you are going to be playing Derby. How are you viewing this one heading into it?
Derby County, I honestly didn't even know that there was a League Cup on this week. Derby County, we should win. It depends on, I'd like to see some players rested, but it's early in the season still. I think he played quite a strong team against Burton because he said players don't need to be rested yet, and I think he might even play a strong team. To be honest, my head's just all about Hull on Saturday. That is a really big game. It is lovely this season not to have that Europa League distraction. I know we got to the final last year, but it really didn't do anything for our league form. I reckon we'd win, and then we'll go on to Hull and hopefully get a 3 points against them.
All right, Jim, I'm going to forego you because yours is actually preview-worthy. We'll talk to Dylan first about their upcoming match with Northampton.
Yeah, so we're facing Northampton, who they were promoted from League 2 into League 1 last season. Jose's a bit of a League Cup fanboy, so I'm pretty sure he's going to be taking this relatively seriously. I hope the likes of, you know, maybe Regan Poole, Fosu Mensah, Herrera starts, stuff like that. But United, even with some younger players in and players that haven't played as much, we should have the quality to move through this game into the next round. But yeah, we're just looking forward to the next EPL round as well.
All right, and Jim, obviously I just introduced this as a big match. It's Leicester versus Chelsea. It's Premier League against Premier League opposition. Leicester obviously flying high at the moment, as I mentioned at the top of the show, having won the Champions League and the Premier League. Chelsea have obviously just lost, not in any European competitions. How confident are you heading into this one, even knowing that there will be some rotation?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more like a Premier League versus Premier League reserves game. it's difficult to necessarily get too excited if your team draws a lower league club, I guess, mostly because of the fact there's a huge downside and not too much upside. if you beat the likes of Northampton Town or Derby County, who, you know, Derby County, managed by Nigel Pearson, really, really struggling this year. So I think they should be quite easily dispatched if league form is anything to go by. Northampton have quite a decent record of upsetting big teams. I think Liverpool last year in 2015, they knocked out on penalties, I remember. So yeah, that's a potentially a bit of a banana skin, I guess, but hopefully they kind of come through that. The Leicester-Chelsea game is a difficult one because we don't know who's going to play. I think we'll see a lot of rotation from Leicester. As I said, I think a full 10 changes is likely, bar the goalkeeper, because I don't think Kasper Schmeichel will be brought back. I think he'll be given time to recover from his concussion, which he picked up only on Friday in training. So it's not like he's had a huge amount of time to recover from that already. It will be exciting to see the likes of Kaputska get a first run out, and I think Leonardo Ruggiero and Shinji Okazaki will start up front. It'll be good to see the youth team players, I guess. That's the big upside, is the guys who are doing the groundwork behind the scenes and supporting the team in terms of like doing the job in the under-23s and the development squad and helping those guys progress as they come back from injury. I don't think Jeffrey Schlupp's going to feature. I think he's still struggling to get back. So it's going to be a big opportunity for the likes of Damari Gray as well, like a huge, exciting prospect. We're so excited about Damari Gray at the club. So it's a great opportunity for him to show everyone what he can do. And yeah, it's nice to have a kind of meaningful game if there's so much in this kind of early stage of the season of the EFL Cup, which sounds wrong to say it, the League Cup, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it should be a good game. And hopefully Chelsea rotate heavily too, so to give us a chance of getting through, should be a good match.
All right, and with that, we are out of time. So if you have any projects you'd like to plug or want to tell people where to reach you, now would be a good time.
Thanks very much. My name's been Mark Simpson, and I've been representing Liverpool. Like I said earlier, I am on Twitter, but it's a locked account, so I don't really accept people. But if you wanted to have a go, it's at Mr. Mark Simpson.
Thanks for listening, guys. I've been Jim. You can find me on Twitter at JimKnight88. I'm also the gaming content manager for a company called Perform. So a lot of different betting company content going out there. So if betting on football is your thing, then by all means, give us a follow and kind of see what we're putting out through various channels like Soccerway and Goal.com as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. My name's Dylan Arvella. I'm on Twitter at Dylan Eloy Arvella, and I host a weekly podcast, which is called The Box to Box Podcast, which you can find on iTunes and on Twitter at TBTB Podcast.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can reach me on Twitter at Kevroff. Also listen to the Championship Roundtable and Fantasy Roundtable that are both on this very channel. I also write sometimes over at TheEaglesBeak.com talking about fantasy. Also check out Playtaga.com and all of their stuff. And Rob and I of the FPL Roundtable have some interesting stuff coming up soon that we will fully announce once it has launched. So on that little bit of intrigue, that's it for us today. Thank you guys so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.